Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
You people are hilarious.
Yes, like, they are, man.
You should hear us reading some of these comments out loud. Hello and welcome to the Ramon Foster Show, a very special edition of the Ramon Show, starring, still and all, the guy over here to my side.
I still got a job. You were in question yesterday.
That's right.
I don't think you minded that either, though, DK, did you? I don't think you mind Al taking over for you yesterday.
There's nobody that enjoyed that show more than me. I can tell you that unequivocally. It's unbelievable. How did you feel about it?
It was good, man. That was my friend. Of course, you know that. Al is my guy, been my guy. And he made me remember something I told him. I think it had to be the last year or something like that. I was like, Al, you're my guy. And I broke that down to him. And he was like, what does it mean? I was like, well, when you're my guy, like, whatever you need, I got you. I was like, man, you get up to $50,000 and I got you. And he was just like, and he remembered that. Somehow, of all the bull crap I've said to Al, he remembered that. Now, Al will not be in need ever, anything like that, but that's my dude. So I was glad to hear him talk high about a lot of stuff and just dove in and probably broke down some barriers and some walls that people had perceptions about him or about certain situations. I saw a lot of people yesterday said they had a different perspective on Tomlin. They see why our room was the way it was. They see why the team. It was so much that Al said, man. And we'll do a recap at some point, too, DK.
He's over there on the side. He's Ramon. He's an 11-year starting guard for the National Football League. All 11 of those for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's in Hendersonville, Tennessee. I'm Dan Kovacevic in downtown Pittsburgh, DK Pittsburgh Sports, in case you're new to us. And I would imagine we're going to be getting a whole lot of new today, because our very special guest is none other than the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mason Rudolph, who will be joining us shortly. I got to tell everybody, Moan, I've seen you after football games, after wins in Cincinnati and Baltimore. Last night was a little bit different after the Alejandro Villanueva episode.
It was. That's because they took me to that point, DK. This fan base is our audience response to Al was insane. A lot of people said, man, I never knew Al was this way. I never knew he was this funny. Like, that's why the helmet, I say that the helmet takes so much away from us. It's almost pathetic at times. There's so many fun dudes in locker rooms. By the way, Mason just popped on too. He's behind mm-hmm. the scenes. So we'll bring him up in a minute. DK, what would you rate yesterday?
On a scale of 1 to 78, I give it a 78.
Okay.
All right. I can do that.
Yeah, you can do that. That was
now,
good.
On that note, let's bring in number two. What's going on, Mason?
Gentlemen. How are you doing?
I'm going to be getting out of your guys' way here because I know how that is. There's no room in that where your locker stalls were on the south side.
Not a lot of room there. That was pre-COVID separators too. So there was even much more intimacy. There was more intimacy.
I'm going to get out of the way, gentlemen. It's all your show, Mason. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
That's insane. You bring that up, Mason. I missed that. I totally missed the COVID year, man. Can I ask you? Yeah. By the way, everybody, welcome in Mason Rudolph, man.
Thank you, Moni.
It's all good. I know you don't do these often. I know, of course, the way this season has gone in your career in general, it's been a lot. And you just getting back to a little bit of normal off-season stuff, man. So I appreciate you taking the time for that. And also, since you all are here, subscribe, share it to a friend, do all those things you got to do. Yes, subscribe, share, all of it. Even Mason said it. I bragged on you yesterday too. You know what I said?
What did you say?
Al was late. He told me, and you was in the group chat with me.
Of course he was. Of course
how,
he was
how,
late.
How long did he tell me he was going to be? About how late was he going to be?
5 minutes, and it turned into 15, 20.
20.
I don't know. 20. 20.
20.
Typical lineman. Typical lineman. Late.
Wow, Mason.
I'm just kidding. More typical. Sorry. You should say typical Al behavior, not necessarily painting with too broad of a brush.
That's what I'm saying, man. And then here you are a couple minutes late, and I told you guys, hey, this works off Chrome. And he was like, I'll be good. And then right as we're about to start, what did the smart quarterback say to me in a text?
He said, hey, don't worry, I'll be on time. Chrome will be installed. But in my defense, I actually didn't take the full five. I took about 2 minutes of the buffer. So here we are.
here we go. Man, by the way, I was going to ask you that question. How was COVID? I don't know if I even asked Alejandro about that, yeah. Man.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it, you know, what we enjoyed about it was training camp at Heinz Field at that point. It was still Heinz Field. So, I mean, the hours were better. You had this real long break for lunch. You know, I think there was two locker rooms. I think Minka was like in the visiting team locker room because he refused to get the jab. Tip of the cap to Minka. And so it was literally like everyone, and then he was across the hall. We're like, hey, Minka, you still on the team? So, I mean, it was nice being in Heinz Field, but, I mean, you're testing every day.
Yeah.
I think 2021, you were testing like once a week, but 2020, you're testing every day. Even on the bye week, you couldn't leave town because you had to test. There was a $50,000 fine if you didn't test each day, if you missed your daily test. So it's crazy.
No way, dude. That would have made me want to retire sooner. I'll be honest with you. Like, I know a lot of people made a fuss like, Marquise, you should come back. After hearing that, I don't think anybody that was on the verge of retiring would have wanted to come back, Mason.
No, it was, you know, made us wear masks pretty much everywhere at the facility, at practice. They installed these fiberglass, like face mask masks to go on your face mask. Like that was going to prevent anything, you know? You're already showering with dudes, and then you're like, okay, for the field, we're going to just put this on now, and that's going to really stop COVID. So I don't want to make this a
– Yeah, yeah, we're moving. Show. I needed to know, man. That was insane right there, dog. But, Mason, here we go, man. From Rock Hill, South Carolina, man, you guys put out a ton of athletes. I played with a few guys. One in particular I remember off top, Jonathan Hefney. He was a DB that came out of that area, man. How was it in that area? Because I have a follow-up question to you. It's like, I don't understand, but how was it coming out of Rock Hill?
Yeah, it was what a great town to grow up in, and just great, rich football history. I think a friend of mine, Chris Lowe, is an ESPN reporter, writer.
Oh, he comes C-Lo. On the station, you know, here in really? Nashville. He's going on my brother's show today.
Is he really? Okay.
Yeah, CeeLo broke the Alabama story too.
That's right. And he's boys with Saban. I think that's why he got that.
Okay.
He got that before anybody else. But he coined it Football City USA, because I think if you look at first round picks per capita, meaning like the size of Rock Hill, which is only like 65,000-70,000 you know, population wise, it's put out an enormous amount, a rate of first round picks, and then just drafted players more than any other town. So, yeah, I mean, I was like a freshman in high school when Clowney was playing, Cordarrelle Patterson. I got to watch him. You know, then you had Jonathan Joseph a little older, Ben Watson a little older. Ben Watson, same high school. You know Ben.
Yeah, I do know Ben.
And then Derek Ross, an older head. You know, I'm probably missing some people, but. Yeah, Stephon Gilmore. I didn't mention him. He was a South Point. He played quarterback in high school.
Stephon Gilmore played quarterback?
Played quarterback at South Point High School. Crosstown rival. He was incredible. So yeah, it's a great place to play football. Good culture.
And there's a lot of talent that comes out of the state in general, too. I honestly didn't know where you're from. I was actually thinking Florida. But if you look at South Carolina, though, it has just as much of sunshine as Florida. And the only reason I bring that up is, Mason, you tan so dark in the summertime. I'm like, dude, what? I didn't know where you were. I didn't know what your ethnicity or nationality was. I was just like, golly, this dude is dark in the summertime.
Yeah, that's what Latrobe will do. That long walk of that hill, that'll get you tan. You know, my goodness. Yeah, no, I no Italian or Native American blood in
that's
me.
That's what I thought.
I think that, but I'm just boring old Scott, Irish, and German.
By the way, I'm 17% Irish, by the way, so we're somewhere related, just so you know.
We were closer. I knew we were blood related. I didn't know until today.
See what I'm saying? The only reason I bring up Rock Hill, South Carolina, dude, I looked up your high school stuff just real quick, just to get a little bit. And you threw for over 10,000 yards in high school, which is insane. But in particular, your senior year, y'all listen to this stat line, and I think it just leads to the fact that you've always been a ball player. You've always been a thrower, right? You've always been a passer, making plays. You threw for 4,400 yards or over that. And here's the part that really got me. You threw for 80 touchdowns.
Yeah, well, I think I threw for some 60, and I had some rushing, if you can believe that. I know rushing touchdowns, that's probably shocking you. But, yeah, I think the total number was 80.
It was 80. But you didn't win Mr. Football. Mason, who in the heck won Mr. Football?
No, so there was a great player at the time and named Jacob Park, who was a quarterback committed to Georgia.
What?
And he, you know, he had the SEC, you know, attention. He was committed to a more of a powerhouse at the time. And we actually played each other in the state championship game. We won. We beat them. And then the following week was the announcement of who won that award. And it was him. So, you know, I'm not losing sleep over that these days, but at the time I was kind of like, well, hold on. We beat their team, but it's out of your hands. And he's a good person, and he was a good player. So
you're being far too kind, because I'm thinking to myself, you won state, y'all had a 15-0 season, and you contributed 80 touchdowns in one season. That to me would scar me. I'd be upset, but I know, like you said, I don't even know who dude is, respectfully. But that is fascinating. It just blew my mind that you didn't win Mr. Football. But
yeah, well, I've been blessed in other areas, so I'm not gonna. But yeah, it would have been nice, I guess. Would have been nice.
It would have, man. Moving on to college, just real quick, too. If not Oklahoma State, which is where you and James Washington, also drafted to Pittsburgh, went to college at. If not there, where?
I was LSU was my first offer. The Mad Hatter, Mr. Miles, Coach Miles was my first phone call, first scholarship offer. So I was pretty set on going there for the duration of the recruitment, and then many times these things happen, you know, the team starts to get cold feet, or there's another guy that maybe they're recruiting harder, or they wanted to take two quarterbacks in the same class. And so all those things kind of happened, and I felt like I was kind of getting, hey, we like you, but we don't love you anymore.
Yeah, you felt that.
I did, and the Oklahoma State was full bore. Very much, you're the guy in the class. You're going to play early. And then I liked that the head coach had played quarterback there. I felt like that was going to be, an advantage to me and my growth, that this guy's been through it at the same, very same school that I'm about to go into. So it all worked out well. That was probably the alternative.
Yeah, for sure. But it worked out well, like you said. It ended up being a high draft pick. And the rest is history. You threw for a ton of yards in college, too. Was James primarily your number one target for the most part of your career?
Yeah, he was the number one guy for sure. Great player.
Great player for sure, man. Yeah. Super cool dude, too, man. He's wearing cowboy hats and doing his thing now.
I think he's at his ranch in Dallas now, and he's into the farming thing. I think he's selling horses, raising horses, breaking horses, and yeah, he's got the, like you said, the cowboy hat, the belt buckle, the Wranglers pleated with the boots. I mean, he's the full John Dutton, full John Dutton mode.
That's insane, man. Yeah. But the career ends there, and It's fascinating. I never forget when you guys got drafted. You, Chooks. Who else was in that class? Was Deontay?
Terrell Edmonds. Deontay was a year later. Chooks, me, James, Deontay. Sorry. Chooks, me, Terrell, James, Marcus Allen, who's, you know, one of my favorite, you know, former teammates. Great, great energy provider. Hilarious. Jalen Samuels.
Yeah.
That was about it. Yeah.
Jalen, I never forget Jalen, though, man. The uniqueness of him and the Wildcat when we beat the Patriots at home.
Yeah.
I didn't know. You remember that, man? That I couldn't believe it.
A ton of touches.
Crazy, man. Insane, dude. But moving on from college, man, the story around you was Big Arm, of course. Kev was somewhat quoted as saying had a first-round grade on you. You know what? They said they had a fourth-round grade on me too, okay, Mason? So take it for what it is, right?
Exactly.
But your career and going into Pittsburgh, what was that all about as far as knowing that you were going to be behind seven? I think the perception was we're planning. How did you approach coming to Pittsburgh under those circumstances?
Yeah, I was excited. I think none of us know where we're going to fall kind of in the draft. And I knew it was quite a.
You see who's on the comments right here?
I do. I saw a YouTube thing, but I haven't seen it.
It's Al.
I know. He's got
you have not been blessed in other areas. What is wrong with dude?
He's probably harvested all the jackfruit and the tomatoes from his garden, and he's a little bored now, killing some time.
He don't want to go home to the kids.
Not yet.
Okay.
Big family man. Family man, but loves his family. We're not saying you don't love your family, Al, but you do love your garden.
You know. You love being out of the house, man. But go ahead. My bad. I didn't mean to interrupt you. He's just a fool.
Yes, he is. We were talking. How what it felt like to get drafted. I was excited. I mean, you get drafted to, you know, what a historically successful franchise that's got, you know, tied with the Patriots with Super Bowls. I don't think at that time they still hadn't. I think they were probably still behind us, and they won one in like 18 or 19. But regardless, the Rooneys, Mike Tomlin. I was thrilled, and I knew that I obviously wouldn't. You know, I'd be in the backup role, learning from an older player, quarterback, and I was going to just do my best to soak up what I could. But, you know, it was a joy those first few years getting to know you and that grisly group of mafia members of the offensive line. And, I just don't think many players get to come in and experience that kind of just a very intense offensive line group. I mean, I think that more than anything that molds you, and there's kind of a rite of passage. I mean, I felt like that way when you get to work with you guys I always wanted to prove myself to probably the offensive line more than any other position group. And
did you really?
Absolutely.
Why? Absolutely. You say that, but why that? Because I'll be honest with you. Any other quarterback coming in, I think we somewhat to put them through the rigors a little bit. And I know Pounce can be a hard ass. And we all were somewhat pricks, but we did it our own type of way, though. One of the things we used to get with you was, hey, lower your voice in the huddle. But that was just you. you remember that?
Yeah. It's like the last thing you want to hear is, you know, speak up. You're too quiet. So I'm going in there. You know, I think you guys used to call me like Bruce Wayne or Batman because I thought it was too deep. Yeah. Like, I can't win. I mean, it's one thing if I was like, wait, 80, wait, shot. But, you know, I'm being too deep. That's really what we're going to be critical of. So I can stick with that one.
No doubt, man. But you mentioned why our group, man. And Al somewhat said a little bit, yes, it was everybody, man, that led to our success, right? And that we had as a team, man. Was it intimidating stepping into it? How did you approach it when it was your time? Let's go to 2019 real quick. That when it's your show after how training camp went, being towards UCL, I think in week one, when it was your huddle at that point, your locker room at that point.
I mean, I think in any, I think in your line, if you say your first couple starts, you're not a bit nervous. I mean, I was nervous this past year. I mean, I think if you're not nervous, you're either lying or you don't have a pulse, and it's probably time to retire. So, absolutely, was I, you know, I think nervous and excited all at the same time. And I think it was a Seattle game when I got thrust in there, and we really had a chance to win. We put ourselves in a good position, and I think it was an OPI or a defensive pass interference. Russell throws the ball up near midfield, and they which extends their drive on like a third and extra long. So, yeah, it was you know, but I think absolutely when you're going in there with a group that's protected a Hall of Fame quarterback and so many veteran. I mean, I think you were in like 7 or 8 or 9, and Pouncey was in, you know, 7 or 8, and Al's in 6 or 7, and Dick Dave's in 6 or 7. I mean, it was just a lot of experience, and there was a sense of, yeah, I wanted to do my best and lead you guys so we, you know, do the celebrate, you know, and smash each other's face masks into one another and hug and all those kinds of things.
Yeah. I have to ask you, from that moment right there in 19 to this year, before we get there, I want to show you something real quick from that guy, Alejandro Villanueva Martin. Okay. That pretty much said this. Okay. Let me cue it up. The screen's going to go away real quick. You ready? You have somehow taken credit for Mason's reemergence.
Mason 100%.
No, 100%. See, this is the thing right here, Al. You always do this.
I'm him. No,
you're not him, okay? You used to be. Now you're just you, okay? You're not him anymore, okay? Where's Marquise when you see what I'm saying? Like, you need humbling, like, no.
Mason was part of the Breakfast Club, which is your
he was. So that right there, man, him saying, one, he made you. I thought that was a great chuckle right there from Alejandro, yeah. Man. Yeah, he took a lot of credit, man. But how did we get here? He mentioned our Breakfast Club on how we used to come together in the mornings, man. Did over this last year, those last 3-4 games, 6 weeks of the season, when the conversation started to buzz a little bit more, where is Mason? Why isn't Mason in? Did those moments of you growing up around us, the hardships that you had, the experiences that you also had also, and the people that you were with somewhat groom you for this latter part of the season for you to where your name is really hot, Mason?
I think the answer is yes. I am, you know, I think there's not many quarterbacks that number one get to learn and watch a Hall of Famer work at their very same position. And then I think when I came into the league and our team, I just figured, oh, this is what the O-line is always going to be like, this, you know, constantly competitive, you know, argumentative, the Breakfast Club, you know, the political controversy arguments and one side, you know, Marquise versus Al versus Dave versus you. It was just a great example of what, you know, what a true pros pro position group was to me, I think, and for a lot of the younger players. And it was invaluable. I mean, I loved, you know, and I was telling my mom this the other day, I was kind of like, you know, she was like, I was like, oh, trust me, Ramon and Al, we weren't friends my first couple of years. You know, they had their own clique, and it was a rite of passage. You had to kind of prove yourself to kind of be accepted at that table of breakfast. You didn't just go sit down at that table. That was like Al Capone and, you know, Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack. It was, you kind of had to earn that. And so it was fun playing with you and some great memories, a lot of ups and downs, but yes, I would say yes.
So, If you go back and look at your tape from your rookie year, second year, even preseason tape, so like I said, I mentioned 2019. Actually, that was year 11 for me. That was 10 for Pounce by then. We got old on you, man.
Yeah, you did.
But I said this on this show, Mason. I was like, man, Mason looks calm. I felt like the game was it the which game was it against the was Earl Thomas with the Ravens or with Seattle when he hit you that game? That
Ravens.
Was Ravens. I felt like, and most young quarterbacks do, you get happy feet. You look like you settled in this year. Like you just said, I'm here to throw. I'm here to make plays. If I'm in my spot, everything else take care of itself. What changed from then, Mason, to now?
I think, you know, experience, and that's the best teacher, even when you're not playing. I think you can either go on autopilot mode, you know, I mean, what, 2020, I played one game. 2021, I had one start. 2022, nothing. 2023, until week 18, nada. So instead of, I mean, you can go crazy, and or you can really, really lock in and immerse yourself in the game plan each week, try to help whoever is playing, and then try to be a voice on the sidelines. I think seeing it from the sidelines the last couple of years, and whether it was Canada or Sullivan trying to, like, no, and I think this is quarterbacks, like, I've had a good feel for what Kenny liked, for what Mitch may have liked the last couple of years in certain, you know, scenarios, and certain down and distances, third down, red zone, fringe. And I tried to make suggestions to the play caller, because I think they have a great feel for it, and I think they both did. But when you're in the room with a guy and you know what it's like to run those plays, there's plays that they prefer. And sometimes, you know, yeah. I've been in that position that you don't want to speak up and say, no, I don't like, you know, they give you an option of a play. You know, do you like that one? Yeah. But there's maybe another concept that you love. And so I think that really, looking at it as a coach, helped me grow and helped me mature from a football IQ standpoint.
Did you know physically that you looked more settled in those moments? Because that was what I think a lot of this fan base saw. It was poise. It was steadiness. And also just consistency. I'm not comparing you one to the other. I'm comparing you to you for the most part. Okay. And there's a little bit of us watching, you know, the ones that played before you. But did you notice that you had somewhat brought it down as far as the game, as we sometimes say as players, the game slowing down?
Yes, I think, I mean, I wasn't watching myself on TV, but I think I think I felt like free. I think I felt a sense of complete freedom and nothing to lose, because I really didn't have anything to lose. I thought, you know, maybe this is my last year. Maybe I get another, squeak another year out. You know, somebody gets hurt, goes down in training camp, you get an opportunity or a call. Maybe the Steelers want me back. We'll see. But I think it's a fun place to be. It's when you're not playing with angst or anxiety or trying not to make a mistake. I just wanted to score points and win the game each week. And I think simplifying that in your head made it more fun.
That'll be something for sure you carry moving forward, because it's one of those, like I said, coaching things where they'll tell you, well, we've saw it and now we got to continue to see it. You see yourself honing into that, and not of the perception of playing with house money, but just like, nah, I'm that pro now.
Yeah, I think so. I got into a groove, felt good. Obviously, we didn't accomplish the ultimate goal once we got into the playoffs, but I think I have full confidence that I can play in this league, and that I can replicate that kind of consistent performance.
No doubt. The thing that's fascinating though, Mason, about your pathway in this league too, is you somewhat got buried because, of course, as you said before, playing behind a franchise quarterback, coming to a team where that was pretty much established, and he didn't really miss games. And then, of course, the time where the opportunities could have come, Pittsburgh signed, of course, a quarterback to a significant paycheck. But, like, the perception of you somewhat got skewed. When you look at other cities, Mason, there's other quarterbacks in the same situation as you, and they catch high praise. Does it make you feel somewhat, I don't want to call it slighted, because I don't need nobody to think there's jealousy or anything behind it, but do you look at that and say, why is that situation different from mine?
Yeah, I think, I think everything happens for a reason. And when you're going through adversity, doesn't matter what kind, whether it's there's competition brought in or injury, I think it's no fun. But I think when you look back, I said this to I think our during a presser towards the end of the year. Like, I think when you have adversity, you appreciate the moments of, you know, the mountaintop moments much more. I think it going through injuries, being benched, up and down play, it hardens you for life, and I think it prepares you to be, makes you a better human being, and it makes you more, I think, makes you a little bit, it gives you a better sense of humility and thankfulness to be at the level you are, and in the moment, was there, you know, what was I, did I want to compete, did I want to, you know, prove one thing or another? Yes, but I couldn't be more grateful kind of for how things played out, even though it was tough sometimes, but I think, you know, God is sovereign and his plan is always the right plan. And it's hard to submit to that sometimes, but it's often the most, you know, I'm going to work as hard as I can and let the chips fall where they may.
Al and I were talking about this a little bit yesterday, because we brought you up and I told him that you were coming on and stuff like that. And it's fascinating, though, Mason, that, like you said, God has his own plan for everybody in their pathway. If you roll that way, right? And most do. The actual opportunity to be signed later in camp and be around, honestly, long enough to actually have this. And whether it be injuries or somebody else's misfortune or bad play, how did you prepare even still week to week? And, you know, even when that opportunity popped up of, hey, this quarterback play doesn't look that great, we need to look at Mason, and you weren't tapped into. How does that go as far as reps and preparation to actually start when you know you should be given an opportunity to?
Yeah, I think, during practice, during the week, everybody, I don't know if you know, fans know, but you're taking scout team reps exclusively. And, you know, with being the third string quarterback, Mitch is taking, you know, there's a set of 10 plays, he's taking six, you know, I'm getting four, or it's, so you're not getting a whole lot of reps, but you try to, yeah, whether it's after practice or, pre-practice working and trying to get a few throws in with the first group of receivers, the last group of receivers, just to stay sharp. That is a way, that is the only way that you can stay physically ready. And then I think I have the confidence that, you know, Deontay, got a lot of bank reps with him from 2019. We've been around each other. I know how he gets in and out of breaks. I know his strengths, what are his strengths? What are his best routes? You know, what can we put him in as a position to succeed? George had a little bit of work with him in training camp, in some preseason games, but you just try to, what do those guys do well? And then when you get in there, what concepts do I like? I mean, I was very appreciative of Mike Sullivan and Eddie Faulk and the staff for taking into consideration the concepts I liked, because, you know, it was backs against the wall. We were in desperation mode trying to make the playoffs, and I certainly wasn't gonna, you know, be coy or be quiet about things I like or dislike. This is probably my only chance. We all felt like we were in the same boat. The staff, myself, like we're all fighting for our jobs, and I appreciate that from them.
Yeah. And with that being said, though, too, man, you could see stuff on film, the communication from you, whether you're watching film or the live games or in stadium. You can see you talking and communicating with guys. You can see you getting on the O-line a time or two, you know, and I also saw you walk into a sack one time to Dan Morris, neither here nor there, though. Okay, Mason.
Sorry, Dan. Yeah, I apologize.
But with that being said, though, your ability to command stuff from them, if I'm not mistaken, you and Deontay were probably the oldest guys on the side of the offense. How did you view your leadership and watching either guys you admired growing up or the way the offense had worked before you, to where these guys somewhat needed a leader? And it looked to me, Mason, like you gave that to them.
Yeah. I think leadership is, if it's forced or if it's fake, it doesn't resonate at all. And I think I've never tried to be a rah-rah guy. I'd like to, if I feel convicted about saying something, I'm going to speak it, you know, with conviction, because it's real. It comes from the heart. And I guess those guys appreciated that. I think, you know, that there are some veteran. Deontay was a veteran. Isaac Seumalo, I think he is sort of established himself this year as the quiet leader of that offensive line. He was in year eight. He's been to the top. He's won a Super Bowl with the Eagles. I know all the guys respect the heck out of him. So, there was conversations with the O-line, and, you know, nothing rah-rah, but, you know, trying to challenge ourselves to go down the field, put points on the board, and then when you need to correct things, whether I miss a throw or there's a miscommunication on a route, I think – you know, going to those guys, you know, in the right way, not coming down on them and, you know, but just having a conversation. What did you see? What did I see? How can we improve?
The 2-1 and 2 guys, Deontay and George, however you want to look at it, as far as their roles, man, how was it? Because you really look like you highlighted what they did well. And I'll say this too, in listening to interviews and reading stuff that they said about you, they didn't shy away from actually saying that you did. What was your thought when you got those two guys, specifically them, in the roles that you had them in the later part of the season?
Yeah, they're both talented guys, ultra talented guys. You know, they both, like I said, they both have, you know, routes or things they're better at, they're stronger at. And, you know, it's not the same for both of them, just like anything else. But starting from the, I think it was the second play against the Bengals, George just making my job a whole, you know, very easy and taking a slant to the house. Deontay, against Baltimore, catching a routine, you know, spin in breaking route and taking that to the house. So they're I think they proved that they're pretty darn good after the catch. And you know, they both separate well. George is a little lankier, and you know, anytime he's down the grass one-on-one, you like your odds. You know, Deontay's stop and go is so impressive. Any sort of a, you know, hitch or you know, out breaking route, he's very dynamic at that. I think Calvin Austin showed up. He's a speedster, can do a lot of those end arounds, but he can catch deep shots. Kenny threw him a, you know, beautiful long deep ball. Allen Robinson blocking his butt off, catching balls in critical situations.
Yeah.
Pat Freiermuth, Pat being a, you know, just a killer, you know, in big time situations when they're trying to take away the two outside guys, and he has to work the middle of the field. He does that well. So it was a good group of guys to work with.
And then, of course, to the balance of it all, I think it was which game was it? Seattle. You guys went off, what was it, 400 yards of offense, and you guys just had a day, man. But I don't think there was much incorporation of Pat Freiermuth. But there was conversation of him blocking and his role that he had to play. How was it keeping that talent, you know, somewhat quiet? Like, feed me too.
Yeah, I think that the Seattle game, Pat did have a few, 4 or 5 catches. It was the game before the Bengals game. He didn't have a single catch. He didn't have nothing. And, you know, Pat's an awesome person, a good friend, and a, you know, a team first guy that didn't say a word, you know, when he didn't get but a couple targets, because they were trying to take him away. Cincinnati had seen that in game one. He had a huge day, 120 yards against them, game one at third place. So they were trying to eliminate him.
Yeah.
And then in Seattle, you know, George and Deontay still had, I think, both probably 50 or 60 plus yards each. And then Pat had some yards, but that was an offensive line. That was a clinic gone, running the ball in, you know, being deep in the red zone and still running it in. And Coach D challenged them that week to do that very thing. And Jaylen Warren and Najee just delivered. And I mean, the stiff arms, Najee was just, he was running angry that game. I just remember it. And it was impressive to watch.
Well, he had beast mode there, man. He had to. Marshawn Lynch was in our house. He had to show up. Goodness. How was he, man, with you? Because again, it just seemed like a jolt between all your offensive weapons, excluding the bigs, man. But Najee and Jalen, what do you think about that? Because we on the outside, even me now, not being in the locker room, you know, felt like at some point you had to choose. Like, oh, is it Jalen? Is it Najee? And the answer is no, you really just want both.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's I mean, I think they complement each other well. I think, you know, they both had different strengths. I think, you know, Najee's thunder, and he's going to run you over, and he hits the hole. And really, I thought he displayed a lot of good vision and you know, didn't second guess himself or dance. He hit the hole so hard towards the end of the year. It always seems like he saves some of that gas for the end of the year. He comes on the last 6 weeks where I think a lot of running backs, you know, the shots are taken on their body. They start to kind of fade a bit. Najee is not that. Jalen catches the ball well. You know, his run after the catch, his make you miss is, you know, exciting. It helps us out. It helped us out on a lot of critical third downs where you throw the check down and he makes two people miss and you're moving the chains. So it's a great combination. Love going to work with those guys. They're both selfless. They both did a great job of shutting out the noise on the outside and not letting who are we choosing? No, we're going to both compliment each other, and really happy for them.
There's one clip that the NFL Films, I think, put out. I think it was you talking to Coach Sullivan with Coach Tomlin around. It was like, hey, let's not get scared and close out this game is what he was asking for. Is there any throw that you think you can't make? Because that was one of those ones where it's like, if you're not right-minded, you will seize up and say, I don't want to mess up. But you drop back, and as he said, through a rhythm pass, I think for a first down to pretty much close out the game at that point. What was that situation like for you in Seattle to hear that, know that you got to go deliver that and actually do it?
Yeah. You know, Mike T is very aggressive. You know that in those moments. And I think the element of surprise is always worth bouncing around, you know, when you're in the huddle and you're talking things through. And we knew they weren't going to expect it. They were in a zero defense, and you know, George Pickens one-on-one on the slant. Well, you know, we feel like that's routes on air. And George made a great play, spun out, got us a first down. But absolutely, you know, to have a coach who's that aggressive and he's playing to win, and he's not being too conservative running the ball, trying to run the game out. He wants to win now, and he knows it can be done in one play.
Yeah. A lot of changes happened. Well, a big change happened during the season, of course, relieving Matt Canada of his duties. What was that transition like, Mason, as far as going from one coordinator in Matt Canada to, you know, Coach Faulkner and Coach Sullivan being the guys calling the plays?
I mean, it was a change. And I think the media tried to, you know, make it a headline story. And I think I was just happy the way everyone on the offense, you know, continued to work and didn't really allow it to become a distraction. And as much as I think it was probably a distraction just because of the Pittsburgh. The fans, and we've got such passionate fans, the media, but I think we responded well after the change was made. You know, Matt's a dear friend. I was with him for three seasons, and you know, I only wish him the best moving forward, and hope he can, you know, I'm sure he'll be okay. Get a job somewhere, and then Mike Sullivan, who you know, and Eddie Faulk, that kind of tag teamed the leadership role moving forward. I thought they did a good job too in a tough circumstance. And, you know, especially Mike Sullivan calling the plays in an offense that, you know, wasn't really his. He was working with a scheme that, you know, we added, a couple concepts here and there.
Yeah, because in the middle of the season, you can't take one book and put it in a new book. That's what camp is for. That's what OTAs and mini camp is for, correct? Like, you guys still, for the most part, had the same book.
We did. Yeah. It's, you can't, I mean, you know that in the middle of a week, you try to change too much and guys' heads start to spin. You can't, you know, same formations, motion to shifts, you know, concepts for the most part. You know, there were subtle changes, but like I said, I was happy the way guys responded and you know, rallied and didn't let it become a distraction.
How did they, when you speak earlier of Coach Sullivan and Coach Faulkner crafting the passing game, were you adamant and honestly just, I guess, strong enough to just say, yeah, I don't like that play? Was it those conversations that led to your success towards the latter part of the season? Because here's the thing, Mason, you're playing this thing down, okay? You had 74% completion rate this year. That's like high school stuff. Do you understand? So it's not like you just out there surviving. Those numbers were thriving, Mason. So how strategic were they in curating you?
Yeah, I think the game plan was different each week. We knew, you know, I think Cincinnati we were all out there figuring it out, trying to build chemistry. I hadn't worked with those guys since, you know, training camp really at any level. I don't even know if I'd worked with the starting receivers in training camp, you know, working with the third group primarily. So we were figuring each other out, and I think we figured it out, you know, pretty quick. And like I said, when you got guys that, like George, that made a couple great, great plays after the catch, make my job a lot easier. But yeah, and you know, then you go to Seattle, and like we knew we needed to run the ball. It's a hostile environment, one of the loudest venues in the league. We ran the ball for almost 200 yards that game. So you know, when we highlighted that component, we were balanced in that regard. And then you got a rain game and you know, a monsoon in Baltimore. We knew we were gonna we didn't want to have a 40 passing attempt kind of a, you know, stat at the end of the game or game plan. We ran the ball well that game. So I think, you know, the staff did a good job of, yeah, taking into consideration, you know, my favorites. Pat Meyer did an awesome job with the run game each week, putting us in good positions, never in a bad play. And then yes, I mean, obviously someone's got to call the play at the end of the day, which is, I think, it's probably the hardest thing in the NFL, you know, alongside the quarterback position. And he did a great job. He had a good flow. We were balanced, we scored points, so it was fun.
Thank you. A lot of points, man. I have to ask you this one, too, because everybody from your rookie year, second year, third year to where you are now, every player has growth, man. Do you think, number one, the NFL give players time now to grow up? And also, can you see differences in players that actually become true pros in those moments, too?
Yeah, I think does the NFL give players time to grow and develop? I think, you know, it's a tough business. It's a business. I think that's what's great about seeing people like Geno Smith, who I have looked up to, who, you know, came in, you know, played well, but also had some adversity early in his career, and then stayed the course, stayed positive, and obviously developed quite a bit, and has turned into a heck of a starting quarterback. So I think it's good when you see those kind of stories because you kind of see that, you know, there's a lot of football. I think football justice is a real thing. And if you stay the course and you work hard, you got a good attitude, you're going to get an opportunity at some point. It may be years down the road, but that's what I've tried to stay positive in my own situation. So probably yes and no. I mean, you know, players are expected to perform, obviously, based on where you're drafted, but quick, you know, fast. And some people are ready to step up that fast. You know, our friend Pouncey started as a rookie, who played at a high level.
Oh, bro.
Absolutely. And then there's people that hit their stride later in their career. You know, if they don't get chewed up and spit out. So, I think every situation's different, but it's inspiring when you see the guys that stick it out and get the last laugh.
You got to be able to carry something from this year. Like I said, what I don't want is folks to believe, oh, well, he was playing with house money. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, well, you had nothing to lose. You did have a lot to lose, because if you went out and crapped the bed and they bent you, right, then your career is essentially done. If we can be real about that, probably is going to be done, right?
Probably so.
And that's almost anybody at that point, right, that's in that spot. What do you take from this with how you perform?
Yeah, you take the confidence. You take you take the good memories and you know the practice reps each week. I think people, you know, obviously fans, people only see the games, but the weeks of practice, going through the week as a starting quarterback, you know, the meetings, the walkthroughs, the practice, the post practice meetings, just getting back in that rhythm makes you feel alive again, and it reminds you again what the rhythm and the grind of a week is like. And I think I love that grind, and I embrace it, and I very much look forward to doing that again, hopefully soon, you know, wherever that I get that opportunity. I think I can do it, and I think I'm excited to do it.
It's fascinating when you were talking. I remember like my moment and having that feeling, you know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, I can play. Like, when you have those moments in a stretch of games like that, you somewhat feel like, yes, I belong in the NFL. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was my feeling. And when you catch that feeling, it's like, I'm chasing it no matter what. Like, that's a very unique place to be at. And to see those results directly like that is super cool, Mason.
Absolutely.
So, go ahead.
No, I think we all have those moments. You're exactly right, where you feel like I belong. And then you just keep building.
And you keep building. Speaking of building, man, we're going to field a few questions, Mason, if you don't mind. If that's cool with you.
Absolutely.
First one is this one, man. Because a lot of people didn't believe that. I think they thought you was a small guy, undersized. But are you really 6'5", 235, or similar?
Yeah, I'm 6'4 and a half, you know, probably 230, you know. So a little smaller, I think. I think that was a few cheeseburgers ago when I came into the league and my rookie year. And then, I think Oklahoma State listed me at 6'5 back in the day, and that might have been fibbing a little bit, so, but not far off.
That's that high school stuff right there. They want to make you seem bigger than what you are, man. Here's another from Todd, man. It says, Mason, you came off the bench without much first team reps. How much better can you be with proper time and personnel to prepare?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, I've never gone through a training camp with you know, even splitting the first team reps, much less taking them all. And I think, we'll see what happens. But I think you can. It's reasonable to expect you to be more prepared, more ready, have better chemistry with receivers. Work on new concepts that a coach or a coordinator is installing, and come up with a true list of favorites. You know, I was coming up with a list of things I felt like, hey, if I was in there, I would like, but I hadn't really ran them yet. I think you can make a leap in that regard for sure.
Definitely. Here's one right here from Ben. I like this one. He said, I wonder if you could have that game back against Buffalo. Is there anything you would have done differently?
Yeah, absolutely. There's every game, there's throws you want to have back or play calls you wish you could use at different times I think obviously the first one that jumps out would be the interception there in the red zone and putting the ball more outside, us or nobody type of a spot. You know, anytime you get down there and you got 3 points on the board, it's never fun to walk away with zero. So, that one, I think there was a couple third downs in the game where, you know, they McDermott dialed up a couple good calls, you know, nice pre-snap disguise and it got me. And you know, I think that happens sometimes, but absolutely when I love to go back and it changed and right those wrongs and go to the right place with the football.
From Ash right here, how do you even get better without game practice? Like, some people, of course, don't have to practice, Mason. You know, they get Thursdays and Fridays off. Some people like
that's
myself.
Right. That's right. That's right. Like you, getting those vet days, those Wednesdays and Thursdays off. Yeah, you're right. They still come out and just dominate.
You know, hey, man, it's not bragging hour yet, okay?
That's a good question. I think Isaac Seumalo said something good to the offensive line that I heard this year, and said, you know, the quicker you can, or you know, the faster you can replicate the way that you feel in a scout team rep when you have nothing to lose, when you're playing free, when you know you're just providing a look for the starting defense, and you can channel that same freedom and weightless, you know, just execution of your job into a first team rep, you know, the quicker you can close that gap or translate that style of playing, the better you're going to be. And I think that's, I tried to play around with little things in the scout team when I knew it didn't matter. I wanted to, you know, obviously keep yourself sharp and complete passes, but, you know, arm angles and off platform throws and really, you know, take some risks that you maybe wouldn't take in a normal practice with this first team offense. And I think when you build that confidence, you can make those throws, you can carry that into the real deal.
That is where people get a lot of that stuff. We'll get to Frank here in a second. That's where a lot of people don't understand. Like, practice does mean a lot. The chances that you make, like, one of the things that I tried to do is jump set somebody. And I found out early, Mason, that's not for me. You know what I'm saying? So Isaac was so spot on with that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's also, of course, being smart enough to realize what you should and should not be doing in those moments. Very fascinating. So,
yeah.
Frank asks this, and you answer how you want to. Hey, Mason, I always – sure, Frank. He said, but I always believed in your playing abilities. Yeah. And why didn't Mike Tomlin see the talent for himself? How did that somewhat transpire, Mace, as clean as you can?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason why I understand the question, but I think I will be forever grateful for Mike and Omar bringing me back this past fall and, you know, give me a chance to be ready, give me a platform to keep myself sharp and you know, in the chance and the off chance that an opportunity did come and it did. And so I know Mike T and Omar, they believed in me. They believe in me and they believed in me obviously enough to bring me back to be a part of the squad. So thankful for that.
No doubt. I was going to save that one, but here we go. From Christian, it says, Ramon, please ask Mason if he's coming back. This is a cherry on top that I need in my life. LOL, Mason. How you feel about your free agency, man?
Yeah, I mean, I went through it last year, you know, learned a lot, and it was, you know, discouraging at times, but it was a good experience and to understand how those months flow. And, but we will see what happens. I know I felt good playing in the games I played in, and I'd love to do that again. And I'm going to try to put myself in the position, you know, whether that be in Pittsburgh or elsewhere, to try to you know, realize that opportunity and accomplish that again. So we'll see. A lot of it's out of my hands, and
it is.
All I can do is make the best decision for myself and my family.
And I don't even think people realize how stressful free agency is, because what you have in your mind, you don't know if that's reality. And of course, it's you've gone through it before already, but it's very nerve-wracking, Mason.
Yeah, there's no uncertainty. I mean, there is no certainty of where you'll be, of what city you'll be in. I mean, I think we're all as players a little bit used to that lifestyle because you never know. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow when you're on a team. You know, you could be cut, you could be traded. So you kind of live this life of being light on your feet and getting used to that. But we'll see what happens. I want to keep playing football.
Ask you this. Good conversation, exit meetings before you left Pittsburgh?
Yeah, it was good. Visited with Mike T and Omar both. And, it's so early. I mean, it's like 3 or 4 days after we played our last game. So, you know, there's a lot we, neither side of us knows, but but I felt like they were, you know, meant it when they said they, you know, they'd like, you know, they'd like to have me back, and they both, you know, want to do, feel like they want to do business, you know, future business with me. So that's good to hear. But like you said, there's so many variables, and it's still so early. We're sitting, I mean, it's still January. So who knows what will happen.
I Zach, there was a question up there we'll get to in a second, but this one right here is awesome. And I'm glad you answered this honestly the first time. But can you go through and answer it again? Hey, as Zach goes, hey, Mason, how does it feel at a Steelers home game when everyone was chanting your name? They never do O-linemen like this, man.
See, I don't know. I remember a few times it was Moni, Moni. Maybe I was dreaming, but they should have. They absolutely should have. If they knew the people up front that really make the that move the chains, they'd be chanting all of your names. But
appreciate
but that. But that might have gone to your head too much, Moan, and then you might have started acting different. You might have turned into a diva. So maybe it's, you know, maybe it's for the better that it didn't happen. I don't know.
It was, yeah, man.
It definitely would have gone to Al's head. I mean, he'd have retired and started doing speaking engagements, you know, right there.
Can you imagine how Gil would have been? Oh my Marcus. God,
dude! I miss Marcus.
I miss Marcus too, man.
I need to give him a shout. He was hilarious.
If he stopped changing his number, dude.
I know we're not big time enough to stay on his contact list, but anyways, yeah. I mean, it was cool. It was more for my family. It was a great memory. It being, you know, Christmas, they were always going to be in town for that game, regardless of whether I was playing. But it was a fun night, and you know, thankful to our fans for showing up, being so passionate always, and making it a big time memory.
No doubt about it. I want to get to the one beforehand, so just real quick, Mason, what was your relationship like with Kenny? I think the competition between you two will benefit you both. What do you think, real quick?
Yeah, Kenny's a dear friend. I've enjoyed getting to know him, spending 2 years now, and him with the quarterback room, with him and Mitch, both great human beings. You know, he's a good player, he likes country music. So, I mean, what else do you need to know about him? He's a great guy. He likes a lot of different kinds of music. We all keep it light and play a little music. One of the guys gets to choose kind of what the genre of the day will be, who the artists will be featured, and we go to work. So it was a great room. Mike Sullivan did a good job, and Kenny's a good friend.
No doubt about it. AJ Dub brings up, he goes, hey Moan, that's usually the segment we do. It's called the Hey Moan segment, but he goes, hey Moan, do you, Mason, catch yourself using Tomlinisms in everyday life? Are there any he considers a priority for players to take to heart? Mason, you were preseason MVP for him. Glad you saw you carry that moxie in the regular season. Do you find yourself using Tomlinisms?
Tomlinisms, I think so. I think I kick myself sometimes, like
me too.
In the media, and you're like, oh God, I'm regurgitating this. a lot of them are so good, but they're, you feel like, can I really use that? Because he's so iconic, yep, and funny the way he uses them. And you know, I feel like if I use them, am I really doing them justice? But I think, you know, what is he? Nothing. There's nothing mystical about it. I see it with great clarity. I made a list on my phone at one point. It's a long list.
You gonna pull it up?
Bring out one of my favorites here.
I love
reasonable to expect, skills relative to your position, ball in the hand plus grass, physical conditioning preseason. Oh, you know, this cadence as a weapon. We got to use cadence as a weapon. And sometimes I, you know, Mike would be walking to practice and whoever was playing this past couple of years would go on two or use cadence, and I'd say to Kenny, way to weaponize that cadence, boy. and Mike T would look at me like, you know, really? Screw you. You know, you got using him against him sometimes. He doesn't really like that. It's fun to
I can only imagine, dude. That's the small things that keep you in the locker room, man. That's the stuff I miss right there, Mace. Of course, there's a lot of appreciation too. Jay Freeman comes in and said, man, I appreciate your professionalism on the mic and your accuracy on the field. Where you go, I'm cheering for you. Please stay. They're begging at this point, Mason.
Well, thank you, brother.
They're begging at this point, man. Christian also says, we want you back, Mason. I really hope you come back, Class Act. You on the right. You were the right one there the whole time. I love how they're saying this now, Mason. This is cool stuff.
Absolutely.
Elizabeth said, what are you doing in the offseason? What does your training look like? I asked you that earlier, actually.
Yeah, I'll take a little bit of time off from throwing here for a few weeks and then ramp back up sort of, I don't know, mid-February. And then working out, you know, stretching, massage, all those things to keep your body in the best shape, you know, diet. I like to do a little blood work with a nutritionist this time of the year to kind of see diet-wise or supplements, are there changes I should make, you know, am I deficient in something? Right now it's about enjoying some time with family and unplugging for a bit.
Man, you quarterbacks and your doggone massages, man. It's neither here nor there, though.
Yeah, I know. You need them. You got to keep the arm. Got to keep the arm fresh. You know that, Moni. You know that. Got to keep it fresh.
Let that breathe for a second. From Brian says, Mason, in what areas has your quarterback game grown the most?
It reminds me, like, we'll be in team meetings mode, and like, you know, Mike T will say something that is pause deserving. And I'll, you know, like I used to immediately when there's something that's questionable said, I'm like, you know, looking at you, waiting for you to say, and now it's like Cam Hayward will do that every once in a while. But there's so many times this year I looked over and I said, really? You're not gonna cough or you're not gonna interject here. This was a prime example. This was a prime opportunity.
Because coaches say the wildest stuff, man. My God. So it was Cam took that over for us?
Cam took it over, and he did okay job, but I think you need to talk to him and get him up his game a bit in that regard.
A little bit. So just case in point, if a coach says something just blatantly off the wall, and I had the okay to do that type of stuff. I never got the okay. It was just a part of our culture. He'd say something like, and we got to hit it off the backside. And I go, ha!
Yes, he did.
And Coach Thomas, we're just talking about a run play, Moan, but that stuff kept the room and team light, man.
Yes,
it gotta peep that, man. No, Todd, but he asked Mason, do you have any funny Moan stories that he wouldn't share with us himself? What you got for us, Mason?
No, nothing I wouldn't. Nothing that's anything but PG, but I do remember sort of Friday mornings, like coming down to the locker room after meetings, and you started to get into this rhythm or habit of asking me, hey Mace, what are you thinking of this week? Kind of what's the game plan like? Do you like it? How are we going to attack them? And I was, you know, the first couple of times I'm kind of caught off guard. I'm kind of like, okay, I'm trying to give some, you know, eloquent synopsis to you about how we're going to attack them. And then I kind of started prepping each week. Like, okay, I got to really know the game plan this week because Moan's going to ask me, put me on the spot.
Yep.
And if I don't know what I'm talking about, he's going to call me out. So that was just another example of just that veteran leadership that I appreciated.
Those were some good times because you'd be going up to the quarterback meetings and stuff, right? Or you were just coming down. And it just eased me, if I can be honest with you, to say, okay, do you really like what we're doing this week? And it was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Real cool. I enjoyed those little chats.
Al came on here yesterday, man, bragging. One, he's 6'10", right? But he made, if I'm not mistaken, 8-9 different Tom Cruise references. Who does he think
to
he
himself,
is?
Comparing himself to Tom Cruise.
He said he was Tom Cruise. He said he was Maverick. Yeah. He did all this type of stuff.
He's got the military background. He's got the 5 o'clock shadow and the dark Italian skin. So yeah, he thinks highly of himself. That's why you and I have to bring him back down to earth sometimes.
Yeah. And the only reason I brought that up, if somebody brought this up, Mark said, ever had any Clark Kent comparisons? I think you would win a part in a Superman film, Mason. I think you're Dom Draper, but that's neither here nor there.
I like that one better. I mean, my mom probably wouldn't like that comparison better if she'd seen Mad Men. But yeah, no, I don't know. There's funny things out there on the internet that my grandmother will show me, I guess. Yeah, but they're nothing I take to heart like Alejandro does. You know what I mean? I don't store that away like he does.
Like Tom Cruise is 5'2". Like it makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. I think he's just probably talking about comparing his yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't
make a lot of sense.
I'm an NBA player or anything, man. But it's a couple appreciation, Mason. Then I got to let you roll, man. But AJ Dub says, thanks for your time, man. I appreciate you answering his question. P.S. Love the banger of a social media post of you holding the melon. What's the backstory on that?
Oh, God. That was bye week and this past fall. And I mean, we hate to talk about him again. We don't want to name drop him too much because his ego just explodes. But Al, you know, Al Villanueva down there trying to feed the world. He thinks he's going to be curing world hunger with his fruit farm. And so I had to go check it out. And, you know, I was being a goofball.
Of course.
You know, hanging out with him and threw on the Dickies overalls for the day.
It was a good time, man. I got to highlight Rochelle one more time. She says, on behalf of the Foster fan, welcome, Mason, and thank you for leading us to the playoffs. It's a city that wants you, Mason, man. Again, I enjoyed it. I enjoy you. You're a good friend. Of course, when I came to Pittsburgh this year for the Titans game, we rode and we talked, and we had a lot of deep conversations about a lot of other stuff we probably can't say here. But I was appreciative and happy to see you, man. And we talked about it then, you getting a shot of what's going to happen and stuff. But cool to see you right here, right now.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it was good to see you again. I hope to see you this offseason, and always appreciated your friendship.
No doubt. I'm trying to get my wife to see if she can sell you a house if you do decide to come to Nashville.
It might be Nash Vegas soon. We'll see. Yeah, I will hit up Mrs. Foster if that happens.
No doubt, man. Of course, you got free agency. I can't make you commit. This ain't college, and I'm not Les Miles or your coach from Oklahoma. What's his name? Oklahoma State.
Mike Gundy.
Mike Gundy. I'm a man. I'm 40. Him. But we'll talk more, of course, after this. But good luck in free agency, man. Everybody's appreciative of your time. I'm very appreciative of your time and the memories too, man. I'm glad to have you a friend, and thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Yeah,
no
thank
slander.
You for having me on.
No doubt.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. It was fun.
For sure, Mason. DK, that's it. Peace.
See you guys.
Thanks, Mace.
Yeah, thank you, bro.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.